Hello and welcome once again to the Spitballin' Podcast. I'm Ben Rogers, joined by Jamie Newberg. We got lots of Texas Rangers baseball to talk about. Most notably, the most recent news that the stadium is going to stay in Arlington. The lease isn't up for several more years, but there's been talk that the Rangers might move to downtown Dallas. However, it sounds like they're going to stay in Arlington, and there's going to be a new stadium with a retractable roof. So lots of different angles to talk about with regard to that, Jamie. And let's just start with having a roof over the park here for the Rangers. How do you feel about having a roof over your baseball game?
Well, you know, it's the direction that the league is going, you know, in certain climates for sure. You know, in parts of the country where the heat gets unbearable in the summer, or there's rain every other day or more often than that, clubs are putting in retractable roofs. You know, it's the type of deal where you can expect them to play in open air unless the weather dictates that you're going to draw more fans and get a game in when you might not have otherwise by closing it. So I think it was inevitable that the next time this team put a building up, it was going to have a roof, but not a permanent one. I guess the surprise news here is that they've apparently, you know, reached an agreement in principle to do it in Arlington, you know, like you said, years before the lease was going to run. So, you know, it's I don't think it's surprising from that standpoint that that's what the building is going to feature going forward, but maybe a little bit surprising that that we know already that it's going to remain in Arlington.
Dude, I don't mind there being a roof. I know I saw a couple people upset. Hey, baseball's supposed to be played outside. And man, I don't mind it personally. For me to go out to a game, now I suffer from big man heat. I'm a big guy. I like air conditioning a lot. But even taking my kids out there to the park, I mean, at times you know, it's July and it's, you know, 110 degrees and you look over there at your kids and they're bright red and sweating profusely and you're like, am I doing the right thing here? Is this going to be okay? And, you know, so at times it can get so hot in Texas. We're from here our whole lives, obviously. We've known that. And it's something you can get used to. But I would way rather be in the comfy confines of 72 degrees with my kids at a game. And I think because of the fact that it will be played, these games will eventually be played in air conditioning, they'll be much more enjoyable. And I think more people will come to watch games because of that. And the more attendance you have, the more revenue you have, and the more payroll you have. So ultimately, getting air conditioning and a covered field is going to be good for the talent that we see on the field.
Well, and at least to have that option. I mean, we've seen the last, you know, half a dozen years that as this team has gotten better, they're getting day games in July and August because Fox National is dictating that. And it's a little sad when you've got a, you know, maybe a divisional game or a game against the Yankees or something on July 28th, it's Sunday afternoon at 1 or 2 o'clock, and the stands are half full. You know, it's going to be better to see the house packed, and it will be. If it's 110 outside but it's air-conditioned inside, no one's going to say, you know what, let's not go to that day game today because it's going to be uncomfortable or unbearable, or you got small kids, like you said, that are going to just overheat. So at least it gives them the option. And those day games on Sunday afternoons when school is out are not anything where you're sort of trying to steer the schedule away from that, but, you know, just the opposite. Maybe those games make a lot of sense in the summer and give, you know, fans a break from the weather and a packed house in front of a national audience.
Man, I was, you know, talking on Twitter about this or tweeting about it, and it's one of those topics that really gets people riled up. People are territorial, geographically. They're like, hey, this is my, you know, I'm representing my spot. And, you know, because the debate was, should the Rangers move to downtown Dallas? And that upset a lot of people, obviously, in Fort Worth and they're in the surrounding area saying, wait, you're taking our baseball team. And there's some financial realities to consider here in this discussion. Arlington is the 51st largest city in the United States. That is where the team is. They are technically in Arlington. Now, they can draw from Fort Worth, which is 16 miles away, and they can draw from Dallas, which is 22 miles away. But I think a lot of businesses and, you know, they want to be around where the most growth is, the most financial growth. And there's growth in both cities. The Metroplex is booming, all surrounding suburbs. But there's a ton of growth up north of Dallas, whether it's, you know, Plano, Allen, McKinney, Frisco, things like that. And so I know that for the Rangers, that had to be a massive consideration. If we put a park in downtown Dallas, we got guys getting off work that can just casually decide to go to the game. or fans can casually decide to go to the game from Dallas and from those northern suburbs. If that's not the case, if it's in Fort Worth, you can still get people to come, but it's not convenient attendance. It's not attendance that's going to be there if the Rangers aren't winning, per se. And so it's not to say that one area is better than the other. To me, the idea is just get in the area where there's the biggest possibility of convenient, last-minute, casual attendance. Because if that happens, you're packing the place and getting a lot of attendance, even if you're not winning, and therefore your payroll goes up. And so to me, that's kind of where the conversation lies. But unfortunately, people get emotional about it and say, oh, you're dissing Fort Worth to say it should be in Dallas. And it's not about that. It's about payroll.
Yep. And you know, this is a 6 or 7 day a week sport. So, you know, when you're talking about the Cowboys in Arlington, you can pack up once a week on a Sunday, maybe a Monday night, and decide I'm going to make that drive to go see my team 8 times a year. You're talking about 81 times a year, and hopefully more than that, the kind of commitment that you're being asked to make, and especially with Arlington having no mass transit, you don't have that option to, you know, have someone else get you there. That makes it a little bit more difficult. I'm a fan of the urban ballpark. I've been to a few around the country. I'm sure you've been to many more than I have. I think there's a great energy and vibe to that. Look, I live in North Dallas. I'd have been okay if they decided to build this thing in downtown Fort Worth. I love the idea of a downtown ballpark and what that does for a downtown area, and in turn what it does for the team and the energy. And like you said, the ability to decide if you work in that area, decide at 2:30, hey, let's go to the ball game in a few hours. Let's wrap up what we got going. Let's walk over there, or you know, hop over there on a bus or something like that. So I was a fan of that concept of the team ending up downtown in one of the two cities, you know, west and east of Arlington. I'm okay with it in Arlington because that's this team's identity. It has worked. They do draw well. They should draw better with this new development. I would hope that down the road that they develop a mass transit plan to accentuate the, you know, the idea of just deciding last minute to get out to a ball game and not have to worry about parking and that sort of thing. That, you know, that remains to be seen. Maybe we'll find out that that's also in the plans. But I'm with you. There's, you know, the idea of a team being in a downtown area, it helps in terms of corporate sponsorships, attendance, obviously, but the downside in this particular market is you are sort of dissing one half of the population by saying we're going to go downtown in the other half.
Sure. And I'm with you too. Like, I would have been okay with it going to downtown Fort Worth as well, because all those people in downtown Fort Worth get off work and then boom, pour into the game, casual attendance. So I would have been fine with that too. Having said that, I don't have confidence that the city of Dallas could have come together politically and said, yes, we are going to pay for this stadium. You got to give Arlington credit. Arlington knows how to get things done when it comes to stadiums and things like that. They step up, they make it happen. And in this case, what they had was the benefit of the lease not expiring until 2024, I believe. And so it's already in their home court. And by them stepping up and agreeing to do something sooner, that makes it a no-brainer. So I think it's impossible to keep everyone happy, but keeping it in Arlington is the closest thing to that, because you can serve Dallas and Fort Worth equally. You don't turn your back on the 817, and you try to help attendance by making it an easier game to go to in terms of the heat. So, you know, I think all things considered, this is a win-win-win-win situation. I don't know that it's going to impact payroll as much as moving to a metropolitan area would have. But that said, pretty good solution here.
I'm not too worried about payroll. This ownership group has demonstrated that payroll has not been a major issue. They've gone into every pennant race basically by adding to a payroll that they had said in spring training or the winter before were pretty much capped. And maybe the reason is they're saying we're capped because we want to hold some back to make an impact in July. Payroll's not been an issue with this team. And in many respects, as we've talked on every episode of this podcast, the team's going to start getting younger, which means you're going to be filtering in guys making the minimum, which allows you to spend more in other areas of the team. So payroll, it's always an issue, but I don't think it's a you know, drastic issue right here. You're right about Arlington getting things done. I would certainly like to see some of this You know, the news about the plans for development around the ballpark, if that comes to fruition, then you do get a better vibe around the ballpark, and it doesn't feel like it's just sort of stuck in the middle of a region with nothing around it except for an amusement park. If there are hotels, restaurants, movie theaters, maybe residential right around it, then it starts to give it a little bit more of that urban feel that I think would give the ballpark itself a better energy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd love to live in that neighborhood. Can you imagine just living right next to the ballpark? That'd be fantastic.
Yeah, that'd obviously be a draw to get people to live there. You'd be walking distance from, you know, a baseball stadium and a football stadium.
So all things considered, this is great news. The idea of watching baseball and air conditioning here in Dallas-Fort Worth is great. And I think, there's a part of this discussion that became 817 versus Dallas or something, or Dallas versus 817 or Dallas versus Fort Worth and all that. But it's not. This is DFW versus Houston, I think, first and foremost. So it's pretty cool that they've got a positive resolution on this moving forward. That said, we've got a couple other issues to get into here, and we could dive into the bullpen. Obviously, Sean Tolleson has been struggling. He has been removed from the closer role. There's been a shuffling of things. It looks like Dyson will move into the closer role. Matt Bush will move into the previous Dyson role, and Diekman will stay as where he is. I think if anything, this illustrates just how a bullpen can change year to year, and you can never really count on a guy being the exact same from one year to the next. And as great as Tolleson has been the last couple years, he has just not been the same guy this year.
You know, if we look back in recent Rangers history, and a similar thing happened, I can't remember exactly which season it was. I want to say it was maybe 09, where Frankie Francisco was the closer, got off to a terrible start, blew a few saves, and they put Feliz into that role. It was right after his rookie season, and he took off. And you fast forward to last year, Feliz was the guy coming out of camp. Struggled early on. Tolleson took over when Bannister had basically declared bullpen as a no-roles group. Tolleson took off. You know, this is how bullpens evolve. What you want is to have a collection of plus arms, and sometimes the roles get switched around a little bit. You just hope that you're deep enough to be able to withstand those kinds of changes. Not only changes, but in this case, injuries. You know, we got Keone Kella down, and I think 2 months ago, if you said, hey, Tolleson is going to falter a little bit first quarter of the season, a lot of people would have thought Kella would have been the guy to step in next. So you've lost him at least for half the season. Tanner Shepherds hasn't been healthy. Now you've got Tom Wilhelmsen struggling enough that he was optioned to AAA. So the bullpen that, you know, you came into the season feeling it was so deep, maybe the strength of the team has been an issue. And meanwhile, the Rangers are right there at the top of the division. So it's not as if, you know, the bullpen has buried them. It just hasn't been what they expected. And hopefully they are deep enough, as they thought they were, to be able to withstand Tolleson moving out of the role at least for a little bit, and the team not skipping a beat.
So what do you make of what's going on with Dyson? Obviously not exactly the same effectiveness that he had last year. He's still doing a great job, but not as many ground balls, not as many strikeouts. What do you make of what's going on with him?
You know, I don't want to act like I'm a pitching coach or a scout, but from what I've seen, it looks to me like Dyson's pitches are moving more than they used to do. I mean, there's more movement than he had last year, and that's gotten him into some bad counts. You know, he's starting some guys off 2-0 and 3-1, which we didn't see last year. Then you got to come in and, you know, throw basically a hitter's pitch. And so, you know, he's been good. He just hasn't been brilliantly great like he was last summer. You know, he's still got the bowling ball sinker. He's added a breaking ball to the repertoire that he didn't have last year. I'm still confident that he can get the job done. We're about to see. You know, we're about to see him get the ball with the game on the line, which is not to say when he used to get it in the eighth inning or maybe the seventh. You know, the games were on the line often in those cases too. Now it's those final three outs. We'll see. I think he's got the temperament for it. He's got the stuff. Hopefully the results are there as well.
One of the reasons I don't panic about the bullpen, even though I thought it would be the strength of the team and it hasn't been, is this front office always shows the ability to go out and make something happen. Dyson and Diekman certainly weren't on my radar last year when they were acquired. I mean, I was like, who'd they get? And those guys going into this year, I was like, yes, this bullpen is awesome because of Diekman and Dyson. And even Tolleson was a waiver claim when they got him. And look, Matt Bush came from a Golden Corral parking lot. So I know that this team will continue looking under every rock, and at the trade deadline, if they need to, they certainly will fortify that bullpen, whether it's with big names or it's other guys that are they're just ahead of the game on, like Dyson and Diekman.
Yeah, agree with that. And like we talked about a minute ago, Kella will be coming back. I do agree that there will be probably bullpen reinforcement in terms of July trades. And that happens with a lot of contending teams, but teams that are out of it, it's a fairly easy plug-in situation where you can move a guy and not have to worry about, well, how many teams can really use an eighth-inning power arm? Everybody can. And so there will be pitchers available. Dyson and Diekman both had, 4 or 5 years of control each. So you got two plus arms at the back of the bullpen that were making no money and had a lot of team control. That just demonstrates that those guys can be had. I'm still shocked that the Marlins traded Dyson at all. And if they decided that they needed to move him for whatever reason, how it is they didn't shop him enough to get more than Telis and Egi. And maybe there were teams out there that just didn't feel that Dyson had another level. Rangers clearly did, and they were right. But yeah, you can get bullpen pieces to plug into your own pen, and I expect the Texans will do that, especially if in mid-July they're not any more healthy than they are now, and they haven't gotten Wilhelmsson back on track, and if Tolleson has not pitched well in whatever role he's about to move into.
Well, one of the final things I want to touch on here is a story that has been talked about a lot in the media, but we haven't had a chance to weigh in on the Spitballing podcast, and that is the punch heard around the globe. Rougned Odor punching Jose Bautista, and boy, he landed that sucker right on his jaw, and it was it has been so massively celebrated. There's people throughout baseball. Jose Bautista, not exactly a favorite amongst players in the game of baseball, and you see guys in other sports even celebrating this. Even the Rougned Odor Jose Bautista memes are now even replacing the Jordan crying memes out there on the internet.
I think they've been combined in a few places.
Oh, it's so great. It's a phenomena. It's just unbelievable. So that said, one of the narratives that has spun out of this is something that may be unfair to Rougned Odor, is that this guy is a dirty player. What are your thoughts?
Well, I know that the manager's taken offense to that. I've heard a couple of interviews where he just said, that's the furthest thing from the truth. Now, maybe that's hyperbole and it's not the furthest thing from the truth, because, Odor does have a little bit of an edge in him where he can maybe cross a line here and there. But at the same time, I think there is a difference in how those two players are perceived among their peers. Odor plays the game extremely hard and has that chip on his shoulder, and I think in a good way. Now, I say that. I will also admit that if he played for the Astros or the Mariners or, the Brewers, that we probably wouldn't like Rougned Odor if we ran into one of those situations where he was barking as he's rounding second going into third on a triple against the Astros, shortly after there'd been not so much a brawl, but the bench is empty. Odor's got that in him, and we love it. We love it because he's our guy, and I think you need a guy like that to not just necessarily turn up the temperature, but to not back down when the heat does get turned up. And I love that he's part of that mix. I don't think Bautista is seen that way around the league among his peers. I think Bautista's got more of a reputation of complaining, being all about Bautista and less about his team. I don't think Odor has that perception league-wide.
Right. He obviously pushes the limits. He's a fierce competitor, and he is what I would call an irritant that we talk about. And you see it in sports. J.J. Barea is an irritant for the Mavericks. If you're a Maverick fan, you love J.J. If you're a Thunder fan, you hate J.J. He's one of those guys. I mean, they've been here before. Kinsler was one. Napoli, a little bit of one. I mean, Josh Donaldson is another one. There are guys throughout sports who are that way. Bryce Harper is that. And if they're on your team, you love them. And if you're going against them, you hate them. But I think there's a distinction to be made between playing hard and playing dirty.
Bautista's Matt Barnes. That's the difference.
I like that. There you go. Exactly. And so there was a Vegas now has odds out. They're pretty funny about whether or not Rougned Odor will get in another fight this year and whether or not he'll get in another fight in his career. So what are your thoughts with regard to will Rougned Odor will he throw another punch this season?
Well, I'm not a betting man. I would say if for Odor to get involved in another situation like that, he's going to have to be provoked. He's not going to be the one that's trying to get the other team to throw down. That's just my sense of it. But if provoked, he's not going to back down. He's going to be ready to go. He was clearly ready to go last Sunday. I mean, we're going to be talking about that incident 20 years from now. The weird thing about it, not weird thing, but I guess the unexpected thing is both teams ended up flying away and losing three straight. And many of those losses were terrible losses. So there was no quote unquote galvanizing effect for either team. They both sort of went flat right away. But, Texas now faces the division in six of the next eight series. This is a huge stretch coming up as we turn the quarter pole. They got to win in the division. We say that every year. And in the years where this team has won, they've done very well in the division. This next month and a half is going to be huge. Just they've got to make some headway against their division opponents, start to bury a couple of them, and make sure that they don't get lost in the middle of the pack.
So you're a big youth sports guy. Obviously, your kids are very active, and your son Max is on an incredible select baseball team, Pelicans. Shout out Coach Tovar. My two boys play select baseball. They're 8 and 10. And when the Odor fight was going on, we were in a tournament. Were you guys too?
We were.
Okay, so news starts circulating. Everyone's got their phones out, and we're watching video of it. And I notice I'm celebrating. All the adults are celebrating. The kids are going, What happened? What's going on? And so how do you explain that? Because I was like, yes, yes, awesome. Kids, don't ever do that.
I basically said nothing because I was an 11-year-old kid myself, you know, as we heard about it and saw it. I got kind of fired up because I wrote about this in the couple days afterwards. There's something about sports where you're sort of encouraged to get territorial and you know, you've got your team's back, and it doesn't matter who was on the other side, who was right, who was wrong. Kind of fires you up. And so I didn't take that opportunity to teach any lessons because I was right there with them. I needed a lesson taught myself.
Well, I love that the Rangers are going to get a new stadium. I love that it's got a roof. And you know what? There might be a couple statues out in front of it. There's probably going to be one of a third baseman swinging on one knee. And maybe there's one of a second baseman freshly minted at some point who's throwing a punch.
Doubt that. let's just plan that by time that there's a new stadium, that there's a statue of, you know, somebody having a big World Series moment between now and then. Maybe that's Odor. But I sort of doubt that they're going to celebrate the punch by putting it in statue form.
Well, I'd love to see it, and I hope he never pays for another meal in the Metroplex. All right, he's Jamie Newberg. I'm Ben Rogers. Thanks for rolling with us. This has been the Spitballin' Podcast, a Texas Rangers podcast. Please tell all your friends about it. Download it. Look for it. Subscribe. We appreciate it. Until next time, happy baseball, everybody.